And joining us on Perspectives today is Vivian Probst. Vivian is the author, well, her life is a book like all of ours, but her novel is called Death by Roses. Let me let the audience know a little bit about you. You are an author and entrepreneur. This is your first novel, Death by Roses, and explores your fascination with a comedic side of worldly and unworldly events. And we'll have you explain that in just a minute. And you have been writing fiction for the past 14 years, during which time you have also built a successful national consulting practice. Your company provides training to major investment firms that work in the affordable housing industry. And you submitted your manuscript for Death by Roses to the When Words Count Retreats Literary Competition, and you won first prize. So that is an interesting thing, and congratulations. It's awesome. Your first novel, and you win a prize. So you're off on the right foot. So tell us a little bit about Vivian. Oh, Vivian, first of all, thank you very much for taking time to be with us here today.
Well, I just love talking about this wonderful story that has come to visit my life, and I hope the lives of many, many, many readers. So
now,
thank you.
When you say that it came to visit you, can you explain that for us, please?
Yes. I believe that stories exist even before they come to the writer's mind. It's a relationship I develop with characters. And if you have heard of Stephen King, which everybody has. He even says that stories pretty much write themselves. And my job, or our job as authors, is to let the characters tell the story. So I look at it from that vantage point, that this story started to show up after my older sister had passed away of Lou Gehrig's disease. And I was so stunned by grief. So as a soothing way to deal with that grief, I started this story. It just showed up. The character showed up. It took me 5 years, but I listened, and I knew that this story wanted to be published. So it came to me. It sort of visited me, and I believe that's true about any art, that if we're open to it, it'll come and show us what to do, whether it's music or painting or whatever talent you've been given. So I'm a listener. I listen to my character and the story develops.
It's interesting that you say that. We're taping this in April, and this is the 150th anniversary of when President Lincoln was assassinated. And I was reading a story yesterday about a German immigrant who was standing just on the balcony overlooking what was going on down below. And when he saw the president's body being carried across the street, he immediately made a sketch. And in his mind, he said, you know, I'm going to turn this into a painting. And he sure enough did. But it was in hiding for like 60 years because nobody wanted to deal with the fact that, you know, this is the reminder that the president was killed.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was stuck in the family, and then the family finally donated it to a museum. And this is a painting that we've all seen at one time or another, and it's, you know, the president being carried across to the Peterson House. So as you mentioned, you know, we have these stories in our minds, pictures, whatever. And I guess what the people at home may wonder also about authors like yourself or other authors is, how do you sit down and start and crank out a novel? I think for me as a journalist, when I used to work in television news, the first sentence was always the hardest.
Oh, yes. And the first sentence was the last sentence worked on. There was a lot of drama around the first sentence. As you mentioned earlier, I have a tax consulting business, and I travel nationally, and I was in a day-long seminar speaking to a group of people, and at break, my cell phone rang, and the folks at When Words Count Retreat, they said, we're ready to submit your story, but that first sentence, we don't like it. We want to change it. So, I mean, we chased that first sentence until the very last edit. Just remarkable. So as I wrote, I just had to imagine this story. And what I imagined in my mind was a very large woman sitting across from me. Now, I have always had a strong imagination, and mostly it drives me and other people out of our minds. But I felt this energy, this anyway, she kind of came in my study and plopped down and said, just write what I tell you, and this will be your first published book. So I don't want to make it sound too ethereal, but in my imagination. So I started in a very different place than how the book ended up. This thing was rewritten and restructured several times, and I'm so thankful for finding Wedmore's Count Retreat. Can I tell you a little story about that?
Sure.
Yeah. All right. Well, I was writing for 5 years, and my husband was tired of me writing and not doing anything with this book. So I hope it's okay to say this on the radio, but I started hearing this mantra from him, which was publish the damn book. And he said it so often, and bless his heart, his patience, you know, had expired long ago. So I got really irritated at him, and I said, oh, okay. So I got online, and in fear and trembling, I typed in to the search engine, Winter Writers Retreats, and this was winter several years ago, and they came up, and some other groups came up, but they wanted to read the story. And once they read it, they invited me out to help me recraft this for publication. So it's just, Wedmore's Count Retreat is an extraordinary place in Vermont where writers go, new writers. It was my husband who finally aggravated me to the point where I took action. And that's what caused all of this to take place.
Those darn husbands.
He gets a lot of credit.
Those darn husbands, as you mentioned earlier.
I know.
So let me go back on this. And you mentioned about the first sentence that the publishers wanted you to change that. If you have a copy of the book with you, if you wouldn't mind reading that first sentence, or I can read it, whatever you'd like.
Well, I got it. I happen to have a copy right here.
How about that?
Okay. Yes, here's how it goes, folks. If Mayrose McElroy had known that by evening she would be dead a la commode after a fit of rage at her husband, she might have made different choices. Of course, if she'd done things differently, she might not have died while sitting on the toilet.
I'm sure that you've picked the books, and it's the old cliche that, you know, you cannot put it down, but sometimes that's what happens. Now, once you wrote that sentence, did the rest of the story kind of fit in the way you wanted it to? Or is this something you said, well, you know, this is something the publishers wanted, so I'll do it for them?
Yeah, no, they didn't see it until it was complete. And I had put it through my own editing process and had some readers comment on the structure. And it had gone through all of my processes before they saw it. And then, of course, the story went through all of their processes. But it was written without any, I didn't have an outline. I didn't have a vision for it. I didn't know where it was going. And the joy I have in writing is I'm so curious about what's going to happen next. So that's what tells me to write. I am working on Death by Violets now, and I'm going through the same experience. I have no idea when I start. I just get a few thoughts. One of the early thoughts that came to me was the death on the toilet. And I felt like it added a bit of humor. I just want to say that when someone dies of ALS, they become totally non-functional. and they can't do anything for themselves, and it gets to the point where they cannot even breathe any longer, and that's eventually what causes their passing. But I really got this sense of this death on the toilet thing, and so I think it was to help me grieve the loss of my sister, but add a lighter touch to it, because death, says the story, is simply not the end. And life after death, as I wrote the story, was so compelling, so fun, that it even lightened my own dread of that process. So, yeah, I had to write in order to learn what was going to happen next.
We are visiting with Vivian Probst, and she is the author of the novel Death by Roses. And just to give you a quick synopsis, if you know, if you're wondering, well, what does the toilet have to do with all this? And well, that's the first sentence, and we'll get into it in just a minute. It's you know, some of the reviewers have said that it's a catchy premise and entertaining characters mostly outweigh the unpolished writing of Probst's debut. When a small-town housewife and busybody May Rose dies ignominiously on the toilet, killed by a lifetime of rage against her husband and just about everyone else, she's set up to learn a heavenly lesson in forgiveness and being careful what you wish for. Now, I'm not going to read the rest of it there because I don't want to give anything away, but tell us about what about the relationship with May Rose and her husband and that anger?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, I come from a long line of women who are just somehow blessed or cursed with an inherent need to fix the men they marry. And I really believe this story had a lesson for me in it, because I am married a second time to an extraordinary man, but I had to learn that that it's not my job to fix him. He doesn't need to be fixed. It's my job to enjoy him, and so I have learned so much writing this story. May Rose was always after her husband. She was a relentless thorn in his side, because he could just never quite get it right enough or do it well enough. And she carried her increasing disappointment at him in her body. And, you know, a lot of marriages get there. A lot of relationships get from loving the idea of being married to falling out of love, and just both parties being full of rage at each other because they let that build up over time. And so May Rose has to die in order to learn how to have a wonderful life in marriage. And is it okay for me just to tell him, Louis, that she does come back? But we're not going to tell them much more than that.
Okay. I mentioned at the beginning of the interview that you have written about the comedic side of worldly and unworldly events. So if you wouldn't mind kind of sharing that with us.
Well, first of all, excuse me. The story portrays death as just a journey to another realm. And that realm is pretty awesome, pretty wonderful. You have a lot of choices about what to do there. There's a lot of things you can learn. You can relax. You can create. You can just do anything that you want to do, pretty much. The only rule is that you cannot meddle in the affairs of people who are still on Earth. And May Rose is so intent on communicating with her family that she finds out a way to meddle, and that gets her evicted from higher realms. It's the only rule in the book about higher realms. You can have fun. You can do whatever you want to. And it's really meant to be just a wonderful, wonderful experience. But if you start meddling in the affairs of others, you will be evicted. You will have to come back to Earth, learn how to deal with that. And May Rose has a horrible experience in her return to Earth that she has to figure out now if she wants to get back into heaven. So hell in the book is being dismissed, I like to say flushed, out of higher realms because you've violated the only rule you could possibly violate.
We're visiting with Vivian Propes. She is the author of the book Death by Roses. And you were mentioning that May Rose, she thinks that perhaps when she dies, or maybe the reader thinks, well, the problems are over. However, it turns out that they've really just begun, as you mentioned.
I like to say that when she gets to heaven, all hell breaks loose because she refuses to accept being dead. And she is so focused on what's still going on Earth. And she wants to continue to manipulate it and control it just like she did during her life. That she figures out how to do that, but it gets her a trip out of heaven. And so it's just so fun. It's so much fun because it's just all make-believe. And, I think one of the important things to say is that some people have said, gosh, I really hope the afterlife is like that. Wouldn't that be wonderful? And I say, well, I don't know what it is, but I feel like the story was trying to soothe me over the loss of my sister and kind of telling me, Vivian, it's not all bad. It's not all bad to die. Everybody does it. And we just want you to know your sister's okay. That's how I took it. And it really was a gentle way for me to be able to let go of my grief.
So then writing this novel was, in a way, very therapeutic for you?
Oh, my. Oh, my. I mean, at the end of it, I mean, there were times I wept. There were times I laughed. And I could picture my sister, and I just kept getting the message, I'm okay. Everything's okay here. I don't know about the part where May Rose is evicted back to Earth. That's just pure comedy. The part about how the afterlife came through to me in the story was, I know, a message. And there are people who grieve, who have read this story and feel like they're able to resolve some of that grief. I've talked to people who have told me, oh, it just helped them to let go of the grief. So who knows? But that's what came to me.
From there, you also introduce us later to another character, also named Mary Lee. And what's interesting about Mary Lee is that she is a famous horror movie writer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What's the connection there?
Well, it's almost hard for me to say because I didn't plan it that way, but it is true, as you say, Louie, that when May Rose is, I like to say, flushed out of heaven, she ends up in the dying body of a very caustically bitter woman who writes horror movies for Hollywood. Now, Mary Lee Broadmoor is dying, but she is begging to be able to finish her last story and win an Oscar. So May Rose ends up, her spirit ends up inside this caustically bitter woman. So I like to say, that's hell. That's hell for both women to have to share one body. And then I like to take hilarious. So it's just out loud look at two women struggling inside the same body, and both of them want out, but they have to learn their way out, which they eventually do.
People may think, well, this is sad now because, you know, Mary Rose has died and Mary Lee is on her deathbed. Not really, but I mean, she has terminal cancer. Despite those tragic things, as you mentioned, all of a sudden, the reader gets introduced to some very funny things.
And characters.
Yes, yes.
There's so much more to the plot than this. And I think you've hit on another key point, that this is a fun read. The reviews are wonderful. The read reviews are, I mean, they just don't want to put the book down. And several of them have said, I did not want this story to end because, Louis, how, I don't know how to say how readers would feel reading it, but most of them tell me that they just thoroughly enjoyed the story and they want another story. So it is about death. All the characters are dealing with death in some form or another, their attitudes toward it, the traumas that they've built around it, but they're all interesting characters on a remarkably comedic journey. So it's fun.
And
it's laugh out loud fun.
And those are the best kind of books, because you're sitting there and you're laughing on the bus or in the subway or at home, and everybody's looking at you like, what is with you? And you want to share that. And I'm sure if you're like me, you pick up a book, you read it, and you just want to pass it on and want everybody to read it. And sometimes we get disappointed if they don't have the same reaction that we did, because we'll go, well, this was a great book. Didn't you think so? And they go, yeah, I guess. I'll wait for the movie. And that's the problem with some of the generation today, as I've heard from other authors and librarians, the fact that, you know, literacy is down, but at the same time, it's up because of social media. People are reading on their phones, Kindles, etc. Books are available everywhere, but yet you have to sit down and, you know, do your part.
Well, we hope the book becomes a movie. We're all working on it. The greatest compliment an author can receive from a reader is shared this book with someone who I know will enjoy it. And there's a lot of sharing going on in this story. So, and there are people who don't read, Louis, who have read this book. And they say, I don't read, but I read Death by Roses. So I think wonderful going on here, and it will all sort its way into whatever is next for this book. But I'm so blessed. I am now the book's ambassador, and I love to share this story.
And I think what we're visiting with Vivian Probst. She is the author of the book Death by Roses. And as you mentioned, you know, that it was very therapeutic for you. I would imagine that this book is also very therapeutic and fun for people who have been in similar situations, lost a loved one, lost a friend to some sort of horrible disease. And they can look back and go, you know, we had some good times. We laugh at the things we used to do, etc. And that's how a lot of people I know who have passed on have said, when I die, I want everybody to be happy and remember the good times and not, you know, that I was suffering there for whatever long.
Well, can I just say one more thing? It also helps people who have a relationship that's ended, even if it's not through death. Or I think if they're struggling in their current relationship and they can't find the love, they can't find their way through to what they thought they once had. So the book for me deals with any relationship that has ended and or any relationship that is painful at this point, and we can't find our way through to the joy we once had in it. And I just love it. I love what it's what writing it has done for me. I love what I hear that it's doing for other people. It really is. It really lifts your spirits and helps you look at what's going on in your life, I think, in a whole different light.
Vivian, you know, one of the things that we have not touched upon, at least not in detail, and we have about 2 minutes left in the program, but some people may wonder, okay, you read the first sentence, you talked about the cover. So the question they might have is, why the commode?
Oh, yes. Well, they'll just have to let that be, because it's what came to me, and that's all I can say. And you know, I did a little research, and learned that there's some interesting, somewhat famous people who have expired on the toilet. And the more I travel with this book, the more I hear from people who know people who have died in that way. So
Elvis.
The other thing is that for May Rose, the bathroom was where she went to deal with her rage and her grief whenever she had an issue with her husband. So she was headed to the bathroom to pour herself a bath and weep and rage at her husband and then find her way through that. That's what she always did. So that was her place to regroup, so to speak.
Vivian, we mentioned earlier about smartphones, Kindle books and ebooks, all that stuff. So for the benefit of our listener at home, how can they access your book online? Do you have a Facebook page, or where can they find out more about the book?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com. You can order it from bookstores. And if you visit deathbyroses.com, you will learn so much more about the book. We have a video. We also do sell the book there. We have limited edition copies signed by the author that you can get right from our website. But you can get the book wherever books are sold. And we hope you read it. Like I said, Louis, there's nothing that is a greater gift to an author than to know that people are reading and enjoying the story that they've, that's been a labor of love for them.
Well, Vivian, we want to thank you very much for joining us. It was well worth the wait that we had, because we did have to postpone a couple of times due to my illness. But thank you for giving us the opportunity to speak with you. And again, we've been visiting with Vivian Propst. The novel is Death by Roses.